from the respective institutions that would be receiving the transfers from the department. From National Treasury, we're going to the Director General has got an apology from him that he's on his way. He's caught up in the traffic to apply from Durban this morning where the G20 deputies are meeting, DG. Anthony Kamungoma, Chief Director, you're not there yet.
Sure, they're on the way, they're also talking to him.
Okay. And also from the PBMR in attendance, we have Mr. Jacob Chris, Chief Executive, there he is. Mr. Lynette Milne, Chief Financial Officer. And Mr. Peter Anko, General Manager, HR. And Ted Chema, Stakeholder Relationship. Welcome. And from communications, we have Ms. Shota Matole, DG. Communications, welcome. And writing of the president has just been writing these things, Dr. Matani Matamani, Chief Executive. And who is the DG Finance? Just can't write. From Alexco, we have Zamani Elias Mdano, the Chief Executive. And we've introduced the Department of Communications. If I haven't introduced some of the people, my apologies. It is, from Centec, we have Dr. Sebilito Mokone Matabane, Chief Executive. There she is, our official duty already. Department of Sport and Recreation, we have Mr. Matala, Chief Financial Officer. Where is Mr. Matala? Oh, okay. Welcome. And then Mr. Sibanyo, Unit 2010, welcome. If there's anybody I haven't introduced, from communications at the DG, Mr. Harry Matabati. Welcome, Mr. Matabati. We start wasting time. I don't know. Now that the DG has arrived, I see somebody has just disappeared from the city. That's the power that some of us wield today. I've just introduced somebody and said that he's going to be introducing the presentation and he just disappeared. There we are. We are in your hands, Mr. Treasury, under your leadership.
Thank you, Chair, and for accommodating us. No, the man who was here was never meant to do the presentation. It's in the hands of the Dr. K. Brown.
Okay. Yesterday, the motivation for the special adjustment appropriation, the Minister of Finance in the budget speech indicated that amounts were set aside for Alex Corp, Centec, and CBMR in the contingency reserve. These amounts being subject to the satisfying of conditions set out in discussions following the budget. Normal yearly adjustment appropriations bills will be too late to deal with the financial pressures experienced by the Land Bank, Canal, Alex Corp, CBMR, Centec, and in respect of the 2010 FIFA World Cup development. And we'll go through the details of each of these. In respect of CBMR, the Department of Public Enterprises does not have the money in baseline to assist with the financial pressures of state-owned enterprises. In the 2007 budget speech, a commitment was made to financing 51% of the capital requirements of the CBMR, with the intention that the appropriation of funds is subject to acceptable business plans. A contingency for this was then announced. 1,823.573 million is an interim arrangement to fund the operational expenses and meet the contractual obligations of CBMR until the end of December this year. In respect of Alex Corp, settlement of the Rustenburg land claim occurred in April and was subsequently approved by Cabinet. A condition of the settlement is the continued operation of Alex School. In the budget, a contingency for this was announced. 44.7 million covers the operational expenses until the end of March. Otherwise, debt would be incurred. By March 2008, an agreement with the community should be finalized regarding the recapitalization of the joint venture. In respect of the NEL, government issued an indemnity to the NEL. A payment of $22 million is required as a result of a claim against the indemnity for damages. Government was notified of this on the 31st of July. If the claim is valid but not honored, the liability could be much higher. Before payment, the claim must be externally audited. GPE is presently finalizing this process. In terms of Section 72A of the CSMA, payment under a guarantee is a direct charge against the National Revenue Fund and must, in the first instance, be defrayed from funds budgeted for by that department. Appropriation is proposed for two reasons. It's appropriate that Parliament be appraised of this claim, and GTE does not have the funds on its budget to cover this as a direct charge. In respect of the land bank, Cabinet agreed to the recapitalization of the bank, subject to conditions in respect of its executive management and provision of a turnaround strategy. National Treasury is working with the Department of Agriculture in this regard. $700 million is required to address the liquidity shortfall and capital adequacy ratio of the bank, and is subject to such conditions as the Minister of Finance may determine. A government guarantee to the land bank is also required. The deteriorating position of the bank resulted from the writing off of large non-performing loans. In respect of Centec, Centec is repositioning itself as a wireless broadband wholesale provider and infrastructure developer, providing for bandwidth access to commercial retailers. The 2007 budget speech indicated that Centec would be considered for adjustment funding on approval of a revised business plan. National Treasury is able to recommend initial funding of $500 million as contribution to the capital requirements of establishing a broadband wireless telecommunications network. This allocation is subject to such conditions as the Minister of Finance may determine and related to the refinement of business plans. Lastly, in respect of the 2010 FIFA World Cup development, funding requirements flow from the upfront procurement of input materials for stadiums, like roof structural steel, reinforcing steel, and site establishment. In order to minimize cost escalation due to inflation in the site markets and exchange rate volatility. Funding is also required as construction is, in some cases, ahead of schedule, the remainder being on schedule. Site deadlines have been set for the completion of stadiums, $1,905 million, all forward from the 2008-09 allocation, is required to ensure that construction is not constrained by cash flow shortages. Funds to be transferred under the, or to be transferred under the existing mechanism, the 2010 FIFA World Cup Stadium Development Conditional Bond, made reference to the Division of Revenue Act, Act Number 1 of 2007, handed our presentation is the debate number, my apologies, Honourable Chair. National Treasury would like to thank you for your consideration of the special adjustment budget, which we have motivated.
Okay. We are going to take them as you have presented them to us. Which means we are first going to deal with the CBMR. And then move on to Alexco, which is follow the same sequence that you put them. It helps because when you're dealing with us, they're not dealing with the public attention. This is from using the injunction and the phrase in full, what the PPMR means.
think we and we think we know what we're talking about, you know, and we don't.
Okay. Questions from members on the third unit bed modular reactor. Mr. Monojo, Mr. Gibson, Mr. Shazia, Dr. Wu, Woods, Mr. Wang, yeah. All the PBMR, Mr. Lucky.
Thank you, Chair. We are told that the PV and RAN has been committed by government to finance the PV and RAN capital requirements. Can I emphasize the word capital requirements? Now, this amount that you're talking about is 1.8 billion. I just want to know what portion of it is capital for capital requirements and what portion of it is for salary. Can I get a detailed breakdown on that? And if it's, and for how long will this statement last for? Because I've gone through the annual report of the PBMR, it seems it's going to take quite some time before they generate revenue. So the impression that I'm gathering is that you'll still be back next year for more funds, or even sooner than that. So can you get clear details on this aspect? Chair, I found the annual report to be quite informative. When they talk about the demonstration, what they call the PFP and the DTP, demonstration power plant. And I don't want to go into the annual report because we're not talking about the annual report. I'm just saying national security to really give us details of when will revenue arrive from this. And because we are talking about 6 billion, I must emphasize, capital requirements for capital. So once we start to talk about operational requirements, I get confused. Just 5 months. It seems it's 6 billion plus operational requirements. Can you clarify me on that? And just give me details on the question that I have.
I just mentioned that we have invited the members of the portfolio committees also as well. The joint budget committee is with us here, and the chairperson is here, and a few other members of the joint budget committee. But also we have members of the public enterprises portfolio committee. I'm not too sure, I haven't seen the other portfolio committees, but invitations were extended to the because for the benefit of the committee. People that also deal with this department on a day-to-day basis.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to emphasize that because I'm green, I believe in clean nuclear power. It's the best alternative in the world. There's just two questions I want to ask. One relates to the business plan, which says that the appropriation of funds would be subject to a sensible business plan. Have those plans been produced and have they been accepted? And then secondly, a more general question about the viability of the whole project. It's going to cost a huge amount. Can you really tell us what sort of interest there could be from private enterprise, perhaps public-private partnerships, some basis of funding that other than simply from the justice system.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Our board has thinking that whether we did the time, what would be happening in general. General question around the benefits that condition as opposed to what it is proposed. And therefore, why we want to hide when we come to that whether we have that money or not. Yeah, the question on the specific question which we asked us to ask separately. agree with the honorable members on the issues of capital and operational expenses. If you come to us now to say that we have to approve it, and when you approve it, if you also put the operational expenses, to me, it does tell me that we'll continue to do it. And you must also explain to me as to the money which Honorable Moon also asked about. Was it not put aside so that the PDM has begin to roll it and be able to stand on its own? Now it's a daily which we have to see and speak like a local. Thank you.
Dr. Wood? I'd like to add some emphasis to the questions raised by Mr. Gibson. It was at least one, if not two, sort of conferences in South Africa earlier this year to which world experts were invited, and the deliberations were well publicized as the reports. The reports I read suggested these experts saying that RPB-MR project was possibly not going to be viable, and that it was based on an unsubstantiated reasoning. They also cited, as I recall, examples of this type of technology worldwide. So from that, from those experts, from the reports of those meetings, one is left with some questions about the viability. We now read here, as Mr. Gibson has pointed out, that this is subject to acceptable business plans. So what sort of assurances can you give us that these business plans were acceptable and they do assure us of viability of this project? And then perhaps you can also tell us where the expertise came from to assess these business plans. Thank you.
We'll take all the questions and then respond. Irrespective of what the number is, because I do not want us to stay on one of them. Mr. Wan?
Thank you very much. I'm speaking first as a member of the Enterprise for the Committee, where it's for a strategic entity like CDMR, I think a lot of countries, the objective is a beneficial industry for that country, so even if it's making a lot, you should support it. Now, given that you, say for example, you know, when US the military made the first computer, there was a lot of people objecting to it because of the large funding required. But you know, look at the computers today. But now, with that background, it doesn't mean PPM can receive all these transfers continuously, like Member Azia has mentioned. And my question is, with regards to National Treasury, has PPMR been regularly submitting tax protection management reports? And why is that report not given to the Joint Budget Committee? Because I'm also a member of the Joint Committee, which we haven't ever seen tax protection. We can only monitor the expenditure, why the money is being appropriated and transferred to the entity. So how do we know effective management being happening on a regular basis? And from Public Enterprise Authority Committee, we only meet with PPM once a year, and we hear from PPM via DPD every quarter, but still that's not enough. Given DPD has come up with a performance dashboard, but we also meet only once a year. So that's not fair, that is the performance and how we monitor the transfer. And the second quick question is, the share percentage of the share of PPM partner, Westinghouse, has they also been injecting proportional funds together with our funds from National Treasury? Thank you.
Mr. Johnson?
Okay, my simple question relates more with the general
situation that we are presented here, and perhaps the first presenter or rather first presentation that helps with PBMR would then have to carry the burden on the upper part of it. We have here in front of us presented a special adjustment appropriation. Maybe the definition of special should tell us as to the nature of the issues that we're dealing with. However, issues of planning relate to some other issues raised by other, you know, comrades who spoke to me earlier on. Issues of planning should tell us so much about whether or not we are going to be able to sustain what we are doing here today. We have these entities that are supposed to be, in their nature, state-owned enterprises expected to self-fund themselves. However, we are brought here in front of ourselves a scenario that tells a story that says they are not able to self-fund themselves. And the fundamental question that remains there is, what do we do about those enterprises? It also relates back to the National Treasury. As it plans its budget, the current day financial year, top year of a budget surplus, we make use of the policy of that surplus, either to buy back some of the bonds issued, or, you know, to reduce our debt. What are the effects of the current exercise vis-a-vis that so-called surplus that we talk of? Of course, the receiver is going to come to us coming financial year and talk here of overrun, which may therefore bring back the whole surplus story again. For me, it really becomes more of a vicious cycle that we are dealing with here. Surplus, and that is equally not sustainable. If we could be clarified on those two aspects of the whole issue that we're dealing with. Thanks.
Next is Mr. Mgoni. If we were to take 30 minutes on each, we have six before us here. If we were to take 30 minutes on each, it would mean we'll finish at 12 o'clock, but it's getting longer. Members should just bear with us. We are not going to be constrained by time to deal with these matters, but I'm just indicating to members that that is what we're up against.
I just
estimates to clarify a few things. And I just want to come back to two points here. I cannot understand the urgency to put in a special adjustment at this point in time for at least two of the items. You know, we could argue that, let's just say the business plans are not acceptable. Are we going to put through? Are we going to put through special adjustments in all just dependent on when business plans are ready? My apologies, you can call. That was definitely an underlining of the point I'm making. These things are programmed. My apologies to you, Chair. The point I'm making is that we cannot work on that basis. If we're going to stop allowing departments to behave in this manner, then it'll be a free for all. And I think that all the hard work that has been put together, cultivated, developed by National Treasury in collectivity with the other departments will be water under the bridge and they'll become a banana republic. Now, I have a problem with the CBMR, and I, along with many other people in the ANC government, support clean green government, but not at the expense of sloppy budgeting on the side of departments. Now, I don't believe that what we've been told here is acceptable. I don't think we should be held to ransom on this basis either. And I, for one, don't agree with the way we're talking about we'll wait on business plans. I think that's a very poor excuse. Otherwise, let's put all the money into contingency and tell people don't worry about the business plan. It's in the contingency. We've got 100 billion there, 200 billion. Alex Call. Well, when you come to Alex Call, you said,
before your phone rings again, we are going to deal with PBMR and then we'll move on to the other one once the questions have been dealt with. And members, you're not allowed to have another member. That's the mother.
Thank you. Some of the members have covered what I wanted to say, but what I want from National Treasure, by the time we celebrate with the settlers, we did not celebrate it. That the departments, the entities that do not provide business plans must have easy access to funds at any time. That was not the intention. We celebrated it because we expected that the surplus would be used to help government where there are emergencies, where there is real need. I fail to understand why should we approve a special appropriation bill for operational expenses. Operational expenses is not an emergency. And I fail to understand why. And I need, clarity why you regard this as an emergency that needs to approve the bill as soon as possible. But I also want to understand why should there be a tendency from time to time to bail out enterprises that do not perform or that do not comply to TFMA. Why should that be the case? This is problematic. And we are not impressed as the Joint Budget Committee. In addition, other members have referred to other issues. But contractual obligations. We expect that CBMR knew in advance what contractual obligations it has. Why did they not budget at this time? Rather than wait till this time. Why didn't they? Because in their budget, in their allocation, they were supposed to have included these things, they were supposed to have provided business plans so that money can be provided on time. So I just want to know, why was this the case? Thanks, Chair.
Okay. I'm going to request that National Treasury comes first. Oh, told that I have omitted it. Don't request that National Treasury comes first with matters that might have related to National Treasury and general matters. And then after that, request members that when we deal with CBMR, we specifically deal with matters that relate to CBMR and not generalized, because it's going to come to people that might, I mean, to the others that might have things that are unique to those entities and not necessarily relevant when we deal with CBMR.
Thank you very much. I had my hand up for some time, I think. No problem. Firstly, I'd like to know from National Treasury, is this precedent setting? How many times has a special adjustment bill gone through this parliament in the past? And in the first slide, we were told that the adjustment appropriation would be too late. We don't have any justification for that. We haven't been presented with any justification. It would be too late to use that particular process that's been tried and tested. And then just to re-emphasize that, I know colleague Mguni re-emphasized it, I'm going to re-emphasize the question of acceptable business plan. Acceptable by whom? And when would this committee have tried those business plans and be taken through those business plans so we could also apply our minds to the acceptability of those business plans?
Take responses. I would imagine that questions that were emphasized and re-emphasized become one question. Can I take responses? Have I omitted somebody? Is it because of your hand up?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
Thank you.
Now both of them are up. You probably must have had them up and one up for a long time, so that you now both of them.
I'll try to make a button check.
Certainly, just a small question, which is the lady that I did a little bit allude to. The funds needed by the institution to fund operational expenses for our interim.
Now, my question, Chairperson, is if these funds are for up to the end of December, what is going to happen between December and March? Or would it mean that the contract obligations are ending by the end of December 2007? Then there are no contractual obligations thereafter. Thank you, Chairman.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. I will deal with those questions that I could deal with. And also at this stage, thank you very much for asking my colleagues to come here and justify why they are looking for the money. Let me just at this, because I think that there were general questions which I think that unless we deal with them now, they will keep on coming in the when we deal with the other questions. The first one has to do with the impact on the surplus. And part of the reason why the Minister of Finance at the time indicated was that the plans that were put on the table at that time, we didn't find them acceptable. We needed more time to engage on this plan. But government had already made a commitment in terms of the PDMR. So we had to mention it in the budget speech and say, but this money would not be appropriated. Because you see, if we had appropriated it, it's gone. They could go and spend it. So it was more prudent to keep it in the reserve and say that if we find the business plan acceptable, we will deal with it. And the indicator then was that we would deal with it during the adjustment appropriation, which comes next month. Subsequent to the plans having come to us, we were told that there were pressures that had built up, which means that our calculation, both with the PDMR, our calculation then, that said that the entity would survive with the money that had been given until the adjustment appropriation
were not apparent. So it is on that basis then that we ended up having to say, well, there are these obligations. If these obligations are being done now, because this is a research project, it's a massive research project which also involves international collaboration. But for us in the treasury, it was also a very complicated project. The first time that we are having to evaluate a project where the technology is untested and is coming, is being brought up. For the first time, we had to source expertise from outside of the country to assist us with the evaluation of the project. And obviously, this stuff takes time. But the chief executive of the PDMR is here. He can answer for his sins. The impact on the surplus. When we calculate the surplus, we also build in the contingency reserve. So the surplus is calculated after taking account of the contingency reserve. The point raised by Honorable Jones about whether this is the appropriate use of the contingency reserve is a valid one. It would not have been an appropriate use of the contingency reserve if we didn't make the commitment at the time of the budget. We made a commitment at the time of the budget that we will do this thing once there is there are acceptable business plans on the table. And the question that is being raised is this precedent setting? I hope not. This is only the second time since the current Minister of Finance assumed the responsibility that an special adjustment estimate was done. And the last time that it was done was because of a disaster. It was flood at the time. That is when we ended up having to do a special adjustment. We would ordinarily not do it if we felt that the department could absorb it until we get to that point. But as it stands now, the Department of Public Enterprises had already expended 50% of the budget, part of it being that they had to do the bridging, we had to come to this thing. But the detailed questions about CBMR, I think the DG of Public Enterprises and the chief executive of the PDMR would answer those questions themselves. Now, there was also a question about whether we're putting this stuff into operational expenses. See, when we said this is a capital contribution because it goes into the shareholding of the government, so we must not confuse it with where we normally analyze that this is capital expenditure and this is operational expenditure. It's capital in the sense that it is a capital injection. It's not because it is acquiring a capital asset. Because of the nature of the project, as I have said, which uses particular expertise, they got to absorb this, but they must answer for themselves. The acceptability of the business plan, who decides on the acceptability? Well, open the Pandora box, because the debates I constantly have with my colleagues when I say, this business plan is not acceptable, and he said, acceptable by which standards? I said, you see, my job, I am the Director General of the National Treasury, and I am paid to be skeptical, okay? So when you come with a business plan here, what do I do? Like all good economists, I will ask you what your assumptions are. And I will attack your assumptions and test whether your assumptions are robust enough for us to continue with that kind of funding. Suffice to say that it ends up being a political decision. Either the business plan is acceptable by cabinet, or cabinet would say that it is something that must be negotiated between the specific line minister and the minister of finance. And our job as the treasury is to then advise the executive and raise very difficult technical question, and unfortunately, again, it is that time of the year where I will not be popular with my colleagues because I ask the questions they think that I shouldn't be asking. But that's what I am paid for. I have to ask. I have to ask those questions. The questions do become uncomfortable. The business plan, should they be shared with the committees? I'm sure Parliament has the right to know, and if Parliament decides to say bring the business plan, they should be able to see that. I think just as we submit strategic plans as a department, the relevant committees must ask the SOEs give us what your plans are with respect to this. The question was also raised by about whether we think that clearly that it would be too late to wait until the 31st of October. We wouldn't have come here. I can guarantee you that as a pressure, we wouldn't have come here. We could see that pressure coming from there. But there are other issues here. I mean, we will come and deal with the other SOEs. If a guarantee is called, we have to pay. There's nothing that we could do. The only thing that we could engage about is whether the amount that is being called is correct. And we can question whether it is correct. And I think that it is also correct for the committee to ask what is the guarantee for and what made it to be triggered, because you know, when we present the statement of financial related assets and liabilities, we say it's one of those guarantees, and I think that should be perfect for the committee to ask those questions. Were the plans approved? Yes, for the bulk of the SOEs that we had had to bring here, it was because the plan came to the point where we felt that the plans were acceptable. But the CEO of the
PBMR is here, you can answer for yourself. Okay, is it going to be the chief executive of PBMR or is it going to be public enterprise first? Let's start with public enterprise and then PBMR.
Thank you, Chief. I suppose let's start with I'll start with the 1.3 billion and work from there to give some explanations about why 1.3 at the beginning of the year. We requested 1.3 because the anticipation was that around August, September, we would have had a revision of the cooperation agreement on the PBMR, which cooperation agreement is the partnership agreement for the companies or the countries who are initially participating in the PBMR. Now, one of the difficulties that we've had in arriving at an agreement on a cooperation agreement, which is actually quite far advanced at this stage, is probably two fundamental issues. The first issue relates to a work-stop order that we had on PBMR, which has meant that it has caused some uncertainty for some of the partners that were coming in. Now, the technical details of the work-stop order, Chris can explain a bit more. But the fundamental issue why there was a stop order arises is because in the licensing process for nuclear in South Africa, we haven't created a separation as you would have, for example, in the US, where you are allowed to license the technology separate from the site, separate from the operator. In the South African situation, you have to apply for the whole thing at once, which means that in the licensing application for PBMR, you've always had Eskom and PBMR at the same time. Causes quite a few problems in terms of documentation and the rest in life when that goes in. Firstly, secondly, was to get to a point where we could draft and work on what would be a golden shareholding of the South African state that would ensure that when you went to commercialization of PBMR with private sector partners on the project, you would be able to retain at the very least the IP in South Africa directly, because that's where the economic benefit lies. And I think we think on that matter we've progressed significantly, we should be able to get the closure. The other element that we've been doing, and relates in part to this question about private sector partners on the project, is we've been talking to some of the larger South African companies who have particular interest in some of the applications that arise from the PBMR to see, first of all, their level of interest in the project and to see whether we could form a partnership with them and whether they'd be interested. Now, on at least one of the companies, and that's Bechtel,
on the heat exchange in particular, as it has direct implications for some of their technologies. They've expressed interest, and we're working with them to see how they could participate and to what extent they would participate in the project. So in as far as the viability and the, of the technology, from everything that we've done, and even quite enforced by the fact that both Murray and Robert and Stefan have expressed interest in the project, shows the fact that the technology is viable. But in as far as expressing an interest in partnering with South African companies, it's an express intent to be able to do so on the TDMR. Now, so that's why the 1.3. When the TDMR gave in a full-year budget, the 6 billion would be would fund the South African government's equity portion in the project going forward. And so in a sense, when we did put in the budget for the beginning of the year, we had put in for the total allocation, bearing in mind that the other partners, like Westinghouse and Malaysian Life, would only make their contribution once the new cooperation agreement was signed, at which point IDC, Westinghouse, and the rest of the partners would come in and fund their equity proportion in their funding proportion in the project. Now, I want to go back to a point that the DJ Treasury raises, in the fact that the course this at the stage is a project. What the funding goes in as, it is suggested as if it doesn't go towards a capital, towards creating a capital reserve or shares for the government. It's only in the initial stages, once the company is set up, we all convert that money into a proportionate shareholding into the company for the funding that's gone into the company. Unless that will come in on some of the technical details, but...
Thank you, Chairman. Let me start by just highlighting to you that as far as the PBMR business plan is concerned, PBMR did submit this business plan in March this year. We call it the Project Information Memorandum. That is a business plan for the next 40 years, and that was submitted. We also submitted our corporate plan, the annual corporate plan, as well as the quarterly reports. And for the first time, PBMR submitted an annual report. It was an achievement for us because it's an unqualified audit report that was issued and it was submitted to Parliament. Let me just add what the DG of PPE stated, and that is, this is complex in terms of the intellectual property. One has to be careful that you don't lose the intellectual property, so it will be a shame for South Africa to spend so much money developing intellectual property, and then it's lost to South Africa, like, for example, some of the solar technology that we developed. So we have to make sure that we construct a shareholders agreement that will protect the interests of South Africa as far as the intellectual property is concerned. So we, first of all, we have been planning, we have submitted the documents, and in discussions with the Department of Public Enterprises, the unlocking of funds from the international shareholders will be this shareholders agreement, which you can also refer to as a cooperation agreement. That is the foundation for the funding going forward from international investors plus the South African government. So PBMR is a company now of 750 people based in Centurion, and we have a full board and subcommittees. So from corporate governance and TFMA, we do comply. We have, as I stated, an unqualified report from the external auditors, KPMG, and they've been our auditors now for a number of years. As far as the business plan is concerned, we have at TBMR and as the Department of Public Enterprises, we have involved many international experts, and I'll state some of them. Hatch, Shaw, Nuclear Fuel Services from the US, Westinghouse, Sargent & Lundy, and HSBC Bank, and obviously some of the local experts as well. So this was a major effort for us to discuss and to present the viability of this program. And I must also emphasize, this is a program, this is setting a nuclear industry in South Africa. So when you talk about viability, there are three projects. That's the reactor that we plan to build at Kuberg. There's the fuel plant that we plan to build at Kalindawa. And then there's also, as the DG of DPE indicated, a process heat reactor that we are planning with other companies
mentioned some of the examples, the oil sands recovery in Canada. We're in discussions. We're also in discussions with local companies on the process heat capabilities of this reactor. So as far as cash flow is concerned, the DG has explained that we planned, it wasn't that the funding will stop by August, September. It was just that the shareholders agreement we plan to finalize by this time, and that will give government a majority stake of 51%. And once the shareholders agreement is signed, then we will unlock and release the funding from Westinghouse and from IDC. As far as interest from international investors are concerned, we are very happy that Toshiba, who is now the majority shareholder of Westinghouse, have indicated their interest as a company in this technology. They are now considering this part of their technology program. And this is why we have to be careful that South Africa do get its rightful stake in this technology. We're also in discussions with a large Japanese company, and they've started their due diligence. But, Chairman, these things doesn't happen overnight. It's a long process. It's complex. And as the DG indicated, as far as the work stop order, that is an issue that we're dealing with. We're experiencing teething problems in South Africa in terms of the environment that we operate in, and we welcome the draft nuclear policy that's come out, which will assist us to frame this nuclear industry in South Africa. Thank you.
There's one other question that was asked, which was around reporting by PDMR. On a monthly basis, we have a committee with the National Treasury where we review their forecast as well as the funding that they've received. And invariably, whenever we make an allocation, particularly as this is a project of this nature, and the concerns around the funding cost escalation in the process, we ensure that whenever transfer payment is made, it's made based on the fact that the money is going to be
think on particular items for the company going forward.
Okay.
Just can the department pinpoint, you know, we need this fund for contractual obligations, we need to put the contractual obligations into what's the point? Workshop for the supplement. We want for 1, 2, 3 issues. This amount
is going
to
be
that,
this
amount
of the
calculation
is going to be that. A breakdown of those figures. Mr. Mladen, I asked and I didn't get a response because they're talking about 750 people here. I just want to find out how much is going for salary. Yeah, a breakdown that we can do.
Okay, any question relating to the breakdown of the amount from the district?
Thank you. Just also follow up. How much has gone into PDMR project so far? And how much do you anticipate the total project to cost?
Thank you, Chair. Using Chair, what I'm looking at there is our government budget is coming up in a month's time or so, 2 months or so. Now, within the Minister's speech, he made it clear that indeed this is going to be accommodated in the contingency reserve, and indeed this may be accommodated in the adjustment budget. I would imagine the Minister would have indicated to us that this may even require a special adjustment and have indicated why. But certainly at the time of going to budget earlier, there was no contemplation, it would appear, in the Minister's mind that this would require a special adjustment. That's my first caution. The other thing is, if you look at the estimates of national expenditure and the information provided to National Treasury by public enterprises on page 643, they indicate that significant progress has been made in developing the PDMR company's long-term business plan. Now, given that sort of statement would have been furnished in October of 1996, at the very latest, the significant progress, it may be useful to get a clearer understanding
as to how they see the term significant. Do they mean 5%? Do they mean 50? This will go a long way to helping me to understand why they can make such a statement in October 2006. And yes, it would appear, you know, only now possibly have come to the final preparation of such a business plan. If we are to understand that a business plan is going to take 2 years to develop, we may need to develop another process in relation to such funding. Thank you.
The question which I wanted to ask, but it was covered by
down and let them tell us also the question that I also asked, how long will this money last?
Okay, so Danielle will talk to the PDM on will talk to the breakdown. The funds that have been sent on the project to date is about 4.2 billion. That's all of the partners have contributed. The total cost of the project to the demonstrator in 2014 is about 21 billion rand. That should be looking at.
Can we get those figures clearly? How much has been spent? And you said the total is 21 billion. What is it? How much is the software money?
Spent today is 4.2 billion. 4.2 billion rand.
Thank you, Chairman. As far as the 6 billion is concerned, that is the submission that was made for the 3-year period for the NTF, and capital is approximately 70% and operational cost is 30%. So operational cost obviously includes salaries for 750 people, EPCM contractors that were appointed. It also includes the rentals payments for the overheads for the PVMR to continue to operate. So that's as far as the split is concerned. Just to add, the 4.2 billion, that's the money that's been spent since 1999 up to date.
I'm sorry to keep on doing this. We are asking for the breakdown of the 1.4 billion. I'm talking about this. I was talking about the breakdown of the money that they are requesting, and the answer is not coming.
Given the split for the 1.8 billion is the same, that is the 70-30 capital and operational cost.
I think let's just forget about this issue, because we are not getting answers here. You can't tell us the 70-30. We want to know the figures. What is for salary? What is for this amount? Give up.
Right, Chairman? Sorry.
No, Chair, please
look
to the mic.
Oh, okay. Okay. I wanted to say, if you do not have the answers to the specific questions, we can proceed on to the next one, and we will come back to you when you have the answers, and if you have to phone and get that.
Yeah. 7. The overhead, the 22% salary, 11% is overhead, then 11% is for ECCM contractors, and 22% salary.
I think I must work out those 22% and give us introduce to the committee in the record. I don't think you submitted the percentages to National Treasury. Because I think what the committee is asking for is something that should be available, which you submitted with your business plan, which says exactly this is how much you spent. Can you work that out properly, and then we'll come back to you so we can get those 22%. Okay. Members, can I skip?
Thanks, Chair. I got because Mr. Johnson asked a question about the use of the surplus, and he eloquently stated that the surplus would be used to buy back government debt and to reduce the risks that we are exposed to. The surplus, unfortunately, is not still there, and it should be used for that purpose. I think what has helped here is that this money is coming out of the contingency reserve, and we are also having revenue running ahead of target.
Okay, because the contingency was 3 billion, but the total we are requesting here today is 5.1 billion.
That's the power of the chair. I was saying that revenue is also running ahead of target, so because of that, we are the surplus will then be maintained.
Can we then proceed on to Alexkov?
I was given a response to what 5%, what does significant progress mean? And I think, you know, what does it mean? Does it mean that they'd only produced 5% when they went to the report? Is somebody going to get flowers?
Then could you respond to what significant progress means? In the estimate of national expenditure presented.
Chairman, can I just get clarification on which report is referred?
If I may, Chair, I did give the page.
Referring to the estimates of national expenditure of National Treasury. But that's one of the reasons why I was asking whether your annual report is out, because I would imagine that would be the latest.
That's correct, Chairman. The annual report also gives post-balance sheet events. So I think that will be clear in the annual report as far as the progress. I can give you very shortly, I can just give you briefly some of the progress. That for the reactor pressure vessel, we have about 70% of the components, the raw material is already in Spain and in the factories. As far as the casting of stainless steel for the pour barrel, that will start early October in Japan at Japan Steelworks. As far as our turbine is concerned, the turbine blades, we started with the manufacturing of the turbine blades, and that is for the major components, your pressure vessel, your core barrel. We also have completed a machining facility in Germany. It's a 7 million euro machining facility at SGL in Germany. This facility will be used to machine the core structures, the graphite structures. We also, as far as the fuel is concerned, we have commissioned the coker for fuel production that will be tested in Russia by the end of the year. We also, in terms of our facilities, we've completed our helium test facility, our heat transfer test facility, and our heat process facility. So, from a reactor point of view, the major components, the long lead materials, have been ordered, and I've stated the progress. For the fuel plant, we will start to place contracts, and we're already busy with the modification of the plant, the building at Fellendaba, and that's in the short space of time, the progress that I can do.
Okay, I want to want us to move on because, we also would not want to change the work of the Portfolio Commission on Public Enterprise. We are going to be dealing with some of these issues. All we want to engage with, we want additional funding, special adjustments appropriation. We need to focus on that, and we need to deal with that without getting into what we are going to be dealing with in a short while. Alexco, questions for members? Mr. Gibson, Mr. Mloto? Go ahead.
Chairperson, just two questions. Can we be told what the amount of the settlement is? In other words, the basic terms of the settlement, but how much is it going to cost the taxpayer? Secondly, the statement is made here that a condition of the settlement is the continued operation of AlexCorp. Now, the implication of that is that if it hadn't been settled, AlexCorp would have stopped operating. Is that what is being said? Because if that wasn't the case, that it wasn't going to stop operating, why didn't the budget make provision for these costs?
I've gone through the annual report of Alexco, quite serious financial problems in Alexco. And according to the annual report, they need to spend for the coming 4 years a capital expenditure of 350.8 million, which works out to 7.7 million. It's more of a general question. Has the National Treasury even thought to this from the other side? I'm not talking about ATV. From the other side, that, I'm worried because some of these ATVs, if we are not careful, they become a drain on the fiscal, a continuous drain. And I hate putting money in a slot machine, believing that I'll get a million tomorrow. You know, people say, when you complain, they say, no, Pagama is the one. So I'm honest, because even the auditor buys what a house, raises the same issue. If you read their annual their report, they indicate that Alaska is dependent on continued financial assistance from government in the foreseeable future to fund its operation and cash requirements. The company therefore may not be able to realize it other than charges that it is in the normal course of business. I'm just saying, for me, this is 5 years now.
And the question in the sense is that how do you, what guarantee have we got that this money is going to do what it's intended to do? Somebody is in. Okay. The next one was Ms. Swamp.
Chair, just to indicate, I'd appreciate my previous question be answered in writing if it wasn't. But on the Alex call, the one concerns the debt itself. Perhaps further clarification may assist someone like myself, because the operational expenses would have already been estimated and projected. And if they were, I must assume that you projected this 1 year ahead, Chief. I must assume that. We've got an MTBS. So, having said that, what is it there that we not understanding? The land claims, all of these are what is called the risk. That's part. AlexCorp knows that the risk itself land claim was on the table. They knew that. Did they make no provision for that in order to continue certain operations? So I think mine is certainly just a clarification to help me get a better understanding of what prevented them from making any provision. And I'm coming back to the point of the adjustment appropriation we would normally expect in November. Is there some indication why we cannot accommodate AlexCorp then?
Yes,
sir. From the knowledge and my understanding about AlexCorp, it's a joint venture, the community are also problem is that, my problem is that, what is it which is present? While they are past and past. And secondly, the other of this question will relate to the question which you asked earlier or earlier. Because when you look at this thing of Adam's Code, speak about March 2008. Why should they not wait until the finish of the book? Why do you pray? Can we get a few there? I'm saying my question still remains that how was this plan approved if it's still running short of, for example, operational costs and working capital? And based on what Mr. Mlotha has just said, how is this plan approved?
The recommendation is that we start with GPD and then we'll give the question of the International Treasury of Data.
The question, Mr. Kipling's question around what the total debt means. If you'll recall, when the land claim was, the claim was anyway up to about 2 billion rand for the company. The final settlement was around 450 million rand, which included the transfer of all of the agricultural businesses that were attached to Alexco, as well as a 49% equity deal on the land mining, because the land, the mining rights would then revert, would move to the community directly. So that would be the total settlement that would have been arrived at the community. Now, in part, because we were negotiating with the community to arrive at a close on the transaction, and we had a problem that at various points, I'm not sure if you would have read in the press, when we tried to do the remining of Maize Cluster, the community put out an incident on us. So there are certain operations that we were just not able to undertake on the mine. So that has meant that the mine wasn't able to earn as much revenue as it would have. The part of the operation that was remained in the state hands were the marine operations of the mine. Now, the mine didn't have capital to be able to go into the deep reserve, to the deeper reserves that it would have. So on the shallow shores, you basically use contractors who were doing that work. And the work that gets done by contractors is subject to available seabeds and the conditions at sea. And so because of that, it minimizes what you are able to claim directly from the sea and therefore the revenue that you're able to get. And for a long time, we were not selling our diamonds in the open market, and so the revenue that we were able to get was much lower. Once we shifted towards selling in the open market, our revenue changed quite substantially. So our requirement now is actually just a requirement to be able to continue funding the company so that we are able to operate it, reach at the, by, I think, the date that we have is the 25th of September, I think, the settlement becomes an order of court. Once the settlement becomes an order of court, we have to fulfill all of the obligations that are attached to that. It's at that point in the adjustment to estimate of the budget that we put in the balance, the rest of the balance that we require to finalize the settlement for the first round.
Morning, all. I think the VJ gave you an overview of the challenge at Alex for right now, which is intertwined with the financial situation at Alex, was intertwined with the settlement of the Lansdale case. If you read the annual report, you'll see the details of what the issues are at Alex. But it's suffice to say that for the past 5 years, Alex has operated at a loss, as we could not invest with the uncertainty of the Lansdale. So we never invested capital to sustain the business, to maintain equipment, to develop a long-term mine plan, and that led to the current situation right now. I think you've asked the question there that the consumer settlement was that Alifu should continue operating. Yes, that's true. And I think that's said a lot in part-tracking the negotiations. Because we're at the point where we actually stop the land mining operation. I'll shout a bit. I'm just providing an answer to your second question there, that the conditional settlement or the land claim settlement was that Alexco should continue its current operations. And I'm saying yes, that's indeed correct. And actually, as I said, fast-tracking the negotiations with the community. Because we came to a point early this year in March where we decided to actually put the land operation on care and maintenance. So that's where we incur costs with the current workforce. And I'm happy that we were able to continue. And this is what this request is all about. To sustain operations in the next 6 months or so, as the DG has mentioned, was we finalize the deed of settlement and implement the turnaround strategy for Alexco. We will need some short-term funding. I think that's the money we're requesting, the $44.7 million to cover the expenses and maintain the operations until end of financial year, which is March 31 March 2008. By then, the joint venture that you referred to will be in place together with the community. The two parties will develop long-term plan for Alexco, and also the approved settlement agreement by cabinet allows for recapitalization of Alexco. An amount is mentioned in that recapitalization program as well. So I expect this to happen in the next 6 months or so. But we can't stop the mining operations right now. Hence, we need the funding in the short term.
So if you do not get the money, if you do not get this money, and wait for the adjustment appropriation in October.
If we do not get the money, then it will mean Alexco will not be able to meet its financial obligations. We will not be able to pay our creditors. We will not be able to pay monthly salaries. The money that's in the bank right now, we will not be able to cater for that in the next month. What was that? $8.5 million.
We'll note you the other
hand. Mr. Compeller, your hand was up. No, Chair, you've asked my question. I wanted to find out you're saying the $44 million covers operational expenses until the end of March. Otherwise, debt would be incurred. Now you've asked how much debt would be incurred in the next month, 5 months that are coming, if this money is not approved.
By the look of things, that has already been incurred. You guys are already in red. Can you tell it louder?
Our monthly expense, for instance, just to cover labor costs a month, is about $1.5 million. And we also need to have diesel and things like that for the mine. So we need about $10 million a month to operate. And obviously, we sell our diamonds on a monthly basis. Some of those expenses are offset by the revenue that we get from the diamond sale on a monthly basis. Also, we don't get enough diamonds from the ground because we don't have the capacity to mine. I think we need to make it clear. So the revenue that we get is a lot less compared to the cost that we incur.
Can we get assistance from Mr. Treasury? But in the budget speech, contingency of this was announced.
What was the extent of the contingency? I've got a colleague here who was part of the discussion on the budget. Thank you very much. We were not fully aware of the amount at that time because of the issues relating to the four case. The four case had special conditions in a different time. And that was done. Oh, sorry, I normally have a really loud voice. Sorry about that. In terms of the court case, we were waiting for the settlement to make it. We did not put an amount in, but we were sure that the next court on its own cannot operate anymore. It has been working at a lot. Part of the settlement was that the next 4 months is returned to the community in an operational state. So the question was, would we have had to budget at that stage for the amount? When will the court case be finalized? And when will the money be needed? And as we were, the Department of Public Enterprises said this is now the last minute that can wait for. As you are aware, the adjustment budget money will only be available in December. And at this stage, they don't have money to continue their operations.
Yes,
sir.
For
our
question.
Am I correct in saying that that this is the only diamond mine in the world that operates at a loss? Because if I am correct in that, shouldn't we consider two things? Either giving it to Mr. Oppenheim and asking him to save the taxpayers a lot of money by running it. I'm sure they'll run it at a profit. That's the one thing. Or the other, unless we've got an assurance that it's going to return to profitability, are we going to ask the community who's getting 49% of the share whether they're going to accept 49% of the losses sustained?
Okay. I hope Mr. Gibson is not advocating for the privatization of mineral resources of this country again. Of losses. It doesn't work like that. No. Mr. Azir, the question.
I was going to disagree with the Honorable.
Just your question, don't even engage.
I understand where you wish to come from, where we pass the But my question, Chairman, is that we should maybe be given the figure of the age of the next question. So that we will be able to understand. And secondly, my question still stands, Chapter 2. Because if I listen to them correctly, they said, I think the final judgment will be on the 25th of September. So, yeah. Now, even now, we don't know whether or how much will it cost before we have to wait for the 25th of September. And if it will cost more than what I'm saying, if the judgment goes to heaven and not to heaven, that's another thing. So I want to check about that, Chapter 2. And once more saying that if they have made those things, I want to wait and see the 25th of October when they are just appropriating something.
Yeah, it depends on the people that are already on the red are able to wait. Ms. Fabs.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think in reference to the speech made by the Minister, the Minister only raised the issue here of the basically the settlement of the land claim. That was clear in the case. And we are dealing with that here at this meeting. But the meeting has also covered here operational costs. Now, the land claim has not been settled. So that we all accept. Just as we accepted it at the time when we passed the budget, we understand that. What we weren't briefed about, of course, which may have been quite useful, is that this was 10 million a month, and you were expecting to run out of money in September. Now, you must have known you were going to run out of money because you know how much it costs a month. So why didn't you alert the minister? Or me? But, you know, who did you alert on this matter? Did you tell the Minister of Public Enterprises, we're going to be in debt in August? Did you tell him that? Did you tell him you're running at a massive operational loss thing? And he said, it's all okay, carry on. We're organising something like a special adjustment. I'm sure he didn't. So what I'd like to know is, on what premise did you just move ahead? On the premise that there is an acknowledgement that you can run at the loss. And if there is this acknowledgement, then we need to ask National Treasury, why didn't they make more funds available?
Can we take quick responses so that we can move on?
the quantum, the settlement has been signed by the community and by government. So the sum is fixed.
Can I request that that members speak to GPE through the chair?
Until the settlement becomes an order of court, you then have a firm number. But there's a number on the table, and it's the number that we've provided to Treasury as well on the total settlement. Now, to some extent, this is a public, and it's a public process, and this is a process that requires final ratification by the court, so I'm not sure if we are at liberty to divulge the entire sum. And hence, the rest of the funding is going to be required, is requested later on, after it becomes a settlement of court. Secondly, with respect to the ELESCO as a mine, one of the things that we have indicated is that it was not capitalized, it's got old equipment. But one of the things that we are now doing, because the intention is not to saddle the community with an asset that's worth nothing, actually, as may be interpreted as the intention, only 10 to 20% of the land has been explored, which means that there's still a significant potential which we don't know in terms of the reserves that we have available. A proper exploration program takes about 2 years. So we had the choices that we had at the time when we realized that we were running out of money. We were at the point we were signing the settlement with the community. We had two options. The people who work on that mine come from that locality. It's the only employer. We could have put the operations into care and maintenance, which means that you retrench every single person. When you move into care and maintenance, it's not zero cost, because immediately the environmental liability, which is 250 million rand, would have been required by environmental legislation, so that we would go towards settlements dealing with all of the environmental risks that attach themselves to that mine. So the choice that we took was continue running. We'll push to see whether we can get a settlement sooner rather than later, because once it's an order of court, government is obligated to make the settlement, to make the payments. Then we can move towards finalization of the claim. Firstly, secondly, if you will recall also in the press about the same time, there was a discussion between DNE with the Beers around what would happen to the mines in the Mekoneng. Now, that's another project which we've got to move towards as soon as possible, so that we are able to see whether there are possibilities of optimizing the operations of the Beers mine within the Mekoneng, with the electrical mine. But you can't do that without having the community as a full partner. So signing the settlement, getting the PSJV going, then if the PSJV renegotiates with the Beers, you get to a final settlement for the whole mine.
I want us to move on. We've heard the responses. And whether members are satisfied or not, what's important is for us to understand the reason of this special adjustment of purpose. The Portfolio Committee on Public Enterprises is here.
Can I say that we have been very involved with the whole ELESCO issue. 2 years ago, we visited the operation there.
On a point of order, I've heard my hand up, and somebody just suggested. What is the...
Thank you very much, Chairperson. We visited this mine. We've been very supportive of ELESCO. We certainly called Dr. Clark and the previous management of there in terms of how the operations are, is operations being done properly and so on. But the principle of keeping ELESCO up and running has been very close to our committee. ELESCO supports that whole regional area in terms of people's livelihood. That's really the only source of employment for those people around there. They also supplied municipal services. They were supplying health services. Things that I think they should continue to do, but unfortunately that is not our decision. They're selling those things off. I think they even supplied water to Port Nolloth. So it would have been it has had a severe socioeconomic impact on our people in that area. If that might have to go into a closing
statement. I would not want to give you an opportunity to operate. Yeah, no, that's fine. An official comment from the committee. Mr. Johnson, quickly.
Yes, a very small one. Just on the memorandum of the objects of the special adjustment. There is a sentence there, 1.4. The funds have already been announced previously or are required due to a new liability in terms of funds. Of course, it does not only refer only to Alexco. It refers to all of those entities, state-owned entities. But if you could just clarify on that new liability, maybe through you, Chair.
Can we quickly respond to that? Funds have already been announced previously. Is that the line you are referring to? Or are required due to new... I mean, this is a general one which deals with all of them. That some of them are those that have been announced. Some of them are those with new liabilities. So if we... When we deal with Alexco at the moment, Alexco is the one that has been announced, I would imagine. So it falls under that category. I think that line just covers that. It's a general line.
Okay. What I want to say is just clarity on that aspect of new liability or liability. Maybe best here would be National Treasury people.
Because I think that one refers to the other ones which are now new liabilities. Because we're dealing with six of them. Some are those that were announced, some are those that are new liabilities.
The position is correct. There are those which were announced, but the ones that were announced will be covered by the first part of the sentence. Those which were not announced, which are now arising as a result of the new liability, will then be covered by the second part of the sentence.
Okay, we move on to Jeanette. Just have you write them down. Mr. Blanda, Mr. Gibson. Mr. Mgoni, Dr. Woods, Ms. Pap, Mr. Adia, Mr. Khalidi. In that order, go, Mr. Mgoni.
Thank you, sir. When it comes to Nair, I just want to pose a question in relation. I think that's the matter that the DG raised, and obviously, in the committee, in their great why was the guarantee called? And in providing the answer, I would want to come in and explain to me what's written in the annual report. Because in the annual report, I would have to read the whole sentence here. It says, the design to build packages on the Airbus A400M, consisting of the wing to fuselage, fairing and top shells demanded higher levels of design and industrialization resources and skills. While some of these was outsourced to meet deadlines, the top shell design was completed and six sets were delivered on time to Airbus Kemeny. Further business was derived from Airbus Kemeny with a bill to print contract for the delivery of 188 sets of ribs, spars, and so on. The internal structure of the A400M aircraft vertical thing. I just want to find out whether it's related to those contracts. Is it something different? And in this case, what really happened? Was Dinel not able to meet its own obligations in terms of designing the system?
Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay.
I just want to understand what's going on here. Says before payment, the claim must be externally audited. Can one assume from that that the auditing
not to establish the amount, but to establish whether the claim is actually valid or not. That's the first question. Second question is, it says here, if the claim is valid, that's my first question, if the claim is valid but not honored, the liability could be much higher. Now, I want to know why there would be a question of dishonoring it. I mean, if the claim is valid, we're in the middle of September, virtually, still being audited, assuming that it's found to be valid, is it not possible to say that this will be paid in November? Do it by arrangement? Why would the liability be much higher? Are we talking about interest, or are we going to talk about huge damages, or what? This is too cryptic for my attention. Dr. Woodson?
Just to add on to the two previous questions, Chair, National Treasury is asking for an appropriation here. It's, as Mr. Gibson just pointed out, the issue is far from settled. We don't know that the claim is valid, we don't know that it's being checked. So we just have an understanding of why at this early stage, or even presented with this request for this appropriation. Then further to Mr. Malotta's question, we don't issue indemnities willy-nilly. There must be surely have been some risk assessment, which now appears to the claim is valid. It went wrong. What went wrong? What way did you err in doing your risk assessment?
There are two things that are being covered by both the Honourable and Law School and Woods. There's just one point on this matter. It talks about the appropriation of the proposed two reasons. It's appropriate that we are praised of this claim, of course. Sorry about that, Chair. I'm referring to the last bullet here just in the slide, having agreed that my first question is covered by already. But it talks about the DPE does not have funds on its budget to cover this. Well, I get my voice slowed down now. Right. I said a lot further before. I must just put in a change my voice. Chair, I'm referring to the last bullet on the Donnell slide. In the first instance, one comes again to when decisions are taken by the respective entity to pursue certain projects, to pursue certain bids, and so on. What really I'm concerned about, when you're looking at this amount of money, one would imagine that a lot more work would have to go into it. Already we've heard from a previous entity they took about 5 years to look into various things, the BMR. Now, we don't want to go from to that extreme, to the extreme of 6 months. But the point I'm making is that we know the milk is spilt and we must now pick it up. DPE doesn't carry this in its budget. It may be pertinent to ask National Treasury, if at this point in time, once risks are assessed, do we put a value, a financial value against it, to sort of say, this is the project, these are the risks, these are the financial risks involved, and what provisions are being made before an agreement is reached on the matter?
Welcome, covered with other members. But it's very strange to me where we budget or we want some money for something which we don't know. Whether it's valid or not. Very strange. And secondly, chances that I think it's food for thought for the GPA. To think of for instance, in a, not for the first time or whatever, when it comes, and it's supposed to be a proper human company, and it's supposed to sustain itself, but it's not for the first time. And it's like it's in the human business company. Yeah, yeah, you must be. Yeah,
no, Chair. I'm at the dead end of the list, so all elements of my questions have been taken.
Mr. Mgore.
Thank you, Chair. We requested government to find out from Treasury and to give us all government guarantee to SOE. You are still interested for Chair. We said government guarantee to SOE. We presented some time ago. I think we are still waiting for that. I just want to find out from Janet, as the commenter has alluded to, it's supposed to be a profit-making enterprise. And there's just one, a tender to bid to these armored cars that are anti-tank or anti-mine cars. How many more guarantees have been there that you have?
Secondly, secondly, you know that until the nail undertakes the turnaround and becomes profitable, it wouldn't be able to get into the market to achieve the support that it needs itself. So going forward, and I think Mr. Malotta claims, Mr. Lott raised a section from the annual report, you will see that the company is turning around. This claim relates to a legacy contract. It's not the last of the legacy contracts. I'm not going to suggest that this is the end. There are other contracts which are signed in 2001, 2002, whose conditions will start to feel themselves in the company and its operations. But hopefully those start to feel themselves in the company and its operations when the company is turned profitable and so is able to directly fund those itself. But I'll ask Nana to talk to some of the other detailed questions around the claim.
Thanks, Portia. The contract, the indemnity does relate to the Airbus contract. It does relate to damages. With regards to the risk management, there is a process for risk management, and now reports against the indemnity on a monthly basis to both the Department of Public Enterprises and to National Treasury. All the risks have been identified and quantified, and there is a report against those risks. I just want to stress the point that Portia makes about legacy contracts. We are turning the NAL around, but defense contracts typically can last anything from 3 years to 15 years. And we all of the bad contracts that we have in the NAL, the reason that we've always said that it will take 3 to 4 years to turn the NAL around is because we need those legacy contracts to get out of the system. And so the NAL will be loss-making for the next couple of years. But as you can see from our annual report, we are making large steps in terms of our turnaround. Thank you.
How many more guarantees are there? We just want to change that to the process. Are there guarantees?
See, the law has no other guarantees except for this one.
I think, remember, we do publish the guarantees in the budget review. Some that the members requested when they came to the treasury on the 8th of August. The Monday. That information, we had to comprise. Yes, I would have mixed up the name. That information, I'm told, will be with the committee next week. It was an onerous task to put that information in a legible way, because the conditions differ depending on the risk that you are trying to mitigate. I just urge the committee that if when they go through the staff, they find that they need clarity, they should not hesitate to contact us because we will provide that clarity. The question about whether the indemnities are issues really needed. As I say that the approach is that when we give guarantees or indemnities, a relevant department will apply to the National Treasury via their executive authority. The guarantee, the request for guarantee will then be processed by the Guarantee Certification Committee for the minister's concurrence. And I guess the reason why the DG of Public Enterprises is saying this thing is a legacy one was that in the case of this particular one, when it came to the Guarantee Certification Committee, the South Africa has already committed itself. We had to weigh and say that what are the costs of pulling out of the commitment relative to managing the risks associated with the commitment. It was a very, very difficult guarantee to deal with. It was only, in spite of this thing having been the commitment having been made in December of 2005, this guarantee was actually only processed on the 29th of March this year. That was the time when we actually made the commitment. Well, there was a question about whether this is for the first time, whether this is not the first time that the NAL has asked for the commitment. Well, I will leave that to. To them to respond. In terms of what the value of the guarantees, what South Africa has got one of the the most sophisticated approaches to sovereign risk management. When the group of 20 met 7 years ago, we were one of the only two countries, the other one being the UK, where we quantify the guarantees and we record them in the register. But something distinguished us from the UK though, our guarantees are made public, and theirs were not made public at the time, and I'm made to believe they are now making them public. Now the point here, Ms. Fox, the point here is that for you to do that quantification, you should know all the exposure. If other commitments are made before you could evaluate whether it is worth making, then it exposes you significantly. It's not always a popular thing that you say to people, I'm sorry, you are not going to make this commitment until it has been processed by the Guarantee Certification Committee. And they complain, you know, they would say that, well, these things take time and so forth. But we are talking billions here. And if it's billions, we've got to really apply our minds. And I'm glad that the committee has asked for the conditions associated with the guarantee. Because it would give the committee an idea of the probabilities of any guarantee being called. You will receive that information.
Because I understand why the DG was puzzled. Because he was puzzled to why it hasn't reached us. Because it doesn't get reached us already. Mr. Compella, your hand was up, and then Mr. Blotto, to follow up, Mr. Blotto, and then Ms. Fox.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to find out from the DG, Treasurer. DG, the probabilities that the public enterprise is talking about that this pattern is going to continue for some time. They probably indicate to you that it is an everlasting pattern because they say this entity, the NEP, will run into no profit making for some time. What is some time? Is it for the next 30 years or 50 years in this situation? Or what is the indication that they're giving to you? Because when a person says we will still run into this problem for some time, I think it would bring comfort to this palace to say for the next 20 years, probably we can ask DG to do something different. But if you say for the next 2 years, then that's another matter. But for some time, it is almost shocking to me. I can't just understand that.
Let me just make a brief statement before I make a follow-up. I have no problems with the turnaround strategy of the end. I'm in charge of the serious attempt. I looked at your post-balance sheet event, the contract that you have secured, and I'm quite impressed with that. But the issue here, Chair, which I find difficult for me, let's take this gentleman on the other side, the executive of the company, and we are a board. They come to us and say, chairman of the company, let's write off 232 million. And we ask, what happened? They say, well, sorry, that contract didn't go well. I mean, if I'm a part of that board, I would really be positive and I would say, oh, hold on. We are not writing off the We are not details that are coming from the company. That's my discussion. And I'm tempted to say, Chair, if we don't get the answers on this matter, then request the special secretary to amend this special thing and say, hold on to the mail until you provide us the answers we need. If the answers are not forthcoming, then let your minister know. We'll be requesting you to amend the thing.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, the DG of National Treasury just indicated that, in a way, National Treasury's hands were tied because South Africa had already agreed to this in 2005. I think the response was in the context of responding to the guarantee, the risk, etc. I also want to just indicate that I do understand that these are very complex contracts, etc. But I think that surely Janelle did not get established yesterday or 2 years. It's been an establishment now for
about guarantees, risk management, and the like, and to give some sense of costing in this regard. And besides that, I think Public Enterprise Research AG has already indicated that they themselves have had the good fortune to travel overseas and to look at the way other defense companies operate and so on and so forth. And clearly there are systems in place there that do indicate what would be best practice in this regard. And the point I'm trying to make is there appears to be mismanagement here. That's the issue.
Okay, let's take quick responses to those, and then we will get back to PBMR because I want us to close matters relating to GPE and Bright 4T, which has been outside for some time, and then we'll come back and proceed with the rest. But let's finalize the GPE appropriation.
Thank you, Chief. Let's go back. The land breaks even in 09-10. It becomes profitable in 10 years. So that's the story of the land. It's not an unending hole. Secondly, this is actually quite a bit of a difficulty. It's not for want of answering the question. But the problem is with an indemnity. You have an indemnity to try and make sure that you calculate the risk. You look at the risk exposure that you have available for you, and then you say, should the event arise, or the event arise, I will pay X. And then as the events start working for you, you put in a risk mitigation strategy to ensure that those do not arise. Now, two things that the land has done is, as Lana had indicated, they have a risk plan, and there's a risk mitigation plan. One of the other things that we did do, you see, because Sanal actually has been loss-making for a very, very long time. This is not something that arrived yesterday. It hasn't had very strong contract management and contracting systems for a very long time. And now we're improving the contracting systems that they have in the company. So in the presence of that, you are going to be tied with some contracts where a condition that would have been standard anywhere else was not covered, and so would not have been a standard for cover in South Africa for all manner of reasons, because let's not forget, the canal was created under a particular era. So those are the things that we've tried to deal with. Furthermore, because we have not had these modern contractual skills in South Africa or in Canal, we then formed a JV with Saab on that, so that we would help with the two risks that have arisen now to the point that there's a call on this, the honourable member's question around what is this money for. This one is late delivery on the contract, and also the risks around industrialization. And it's for those two that you have to make the initial payment at this particular juncture. But I think I've answered the question, what the money is for, how we're dealing with the risk, and the fact that the partnerships actually are the ability for us to be able to introduce these modern practices into the company. And as far as saying these large contracts, the truth of South Africa is that the bulk of the defense industry, which is not Sanal, the private sector as well, is actually quite seriously export dependent at the end of the day. And most of it is increasingly being integrated into large systems. So this problem of long-term contracts is going to be a standard in the South African economy that we have to come with an economic response. And as far as that's concerned, we are in discussions with the Department of Trade and Industry around some of the systems that, or programs that other countries have implemented for these kinds of sectors.
Can we then go back to PBMR and get a breakdown of the 1.8 billion?
Thank you, Chairman. I've got a presentation here, but I think it will take maybe too much time, so I'll just read it to you, and we can leave you the presentation with the numbers, if that's okay for you. Sorry, Chairman. Yes. Chairman, I'll start with the actual numbers. Actual to July 2007. Staff cost, 150 million. Overhead, 51 million. And as far as overhead is concerned, that includes your office, cost, your training, advertising and placement of staff, traveling, forex profits and losses. That's the category of overhead. Reactor capex, 297 million. Fuel plant capex, 65 million. then research, which includes the lab at Pelindaba, 25 million, and our test facilities also included in the 25 million. That gives you 588 million. Then the estimate to December 2007, staff cost 233 million, overheads 101, reactor capex 308, fuel plant capex 103, research including labs and test facilities 122. That's 867. That, if you add those two up, gives you 1455. Then, as the DG of DPE indicated, as far as the workshop order, the surplus, which was the underspend, therefore, on the budget, and the funding that we've received is 275, and our working capital facility is 100 million. So that adds up to the 1830.
Okay, if I may request that during the tea break, if we could make that available to our admin, so that we can have hard copies of that when we return. The break for tea. We move on. Land bank. Question. Mr. Malord, Mr. Peake, Mr. Mgone, Mr. Gibson. Mr. Shiko. Asir. Mr. Asir. Thank you, Chair. I just want to find out from this Mr. Shigak question. It's not a tough question. It's a very nice question. I just want to find out from National Treasury and the Land Bank. I went through the Land Bank corporate pair for 2007-2008. In the corporate pair, they indicate that, maybe I was just weak, because these things, when you speak to them sometimes, they are not quite clear. They say the higher level of risk, the higher the level of risk, the greater the degree of capital required. Historically, Land Bank's capital adequacy has been kept above 15%. Currently, the ratio is 7%. Okay, it's talking about a lot of things which I don't want. But, okay, the point that I want to come to, let me read this paragraph, which is very important. It says, this low level of capital adequacy will limit the bank's ability for growth and to fund development. The bank's current capital adequacy of 7% means that the bank can only fund almost 7 cents of each one rand of risk weighted assets, which makes private sector investors nervous as they are taking bigger risk for each bank loan. National Treasury has given the bank a 1.5 billion letter of support to reduce the concerns of the financial market. Now, the allocation is not 1.5 billion, it's 700 million. The question is why? Why do you offer them such such 700 million? What were the reasons? And I read somewhere, I think it's one of your older E&E, that you are part of the turnaround strategy of Land Bank. And would this 700 million improve the capital adequacy ratio of Land Bank, and to what percentage?
The next one must be presented.
Thank you, Chair. I don't know if I'm very close. The first bulletin, Cabinet agreed to the recapitalization provided there were turnaround strategies. Now, my question would be, how far are you now with the turnaround strategies? The last bulletin, deterioration position of the bank resulted from the write-off of large non-performing loans. Now the question is, how do you incur losses or write-offs? Take it into account, if I'm correct, that one, you do call for collateral or security. Two, you do have insurance to insure the loan or whatever to avoid losses. Secondly, how much did you write off and in which financial year? Lastly, Chairperson, how is this 700 million, if granted, going to affect your capital level to enable you to be able to continue with your money? Thank you.
I think my question is more leaning to honorable secret question. The land bank is operating like a commercial bank instead of a developmental bank. Now, how come that they are making a loss or they want to be paid out now by national treasury? And then secondly, of these amount they want, how much is going to developmental? How much are they going to use to help the poor, small farmers and stuff like that?
I'm covered, Chairperson.
I must admit that I didn't look at the Land Bank annual report. Because when you look at the writing off of the loan, in terms of the PSSA, what does it say? How do you write off the loan? Because in my understanding, if you write off the loan, you write it at income, and which you have to pay it back. Now you come to us to say that you write off the loan, and you don't tell us what are those things, and how are they going to that is a problem, a serious question. The other one, partially covered to say by Honorable Mihuri, the issue of who's going to benefit out of this loan, which has been are you subsidizing the emerging farmers? Or what is it, what we are doing? What are you going to do? Who is really going to benefit?
Thank you, Chairperson. My question was also based on the last bullet and they are being covered, but I was also going to ask how much do they loan to the, how are they affected to with the land redistribution and restoration, because you know people who want their land and are somehow blocked when they get to the land bank. Thank you.
Most have been asked by my colleagues, but maybe specifically here one gets the figures as pertaining to the loan book. How much is the loan book? Because one understands here that land banking has been there as a vehicle to finance the farmer, the established farmer. In terms of writing off non-performing loans, are there any such referring to the farmers, the well-established farmers, or do you have as well the new write-off as pertaining to the emerging farmers? I'm saying this because NAFU, for instance, is consistently complaining that Land Bank is not coming on board in assisting to address the issue of emerging farmers. Maybe again, last but one bulletin, the government guarantee to Land Bank is also required. How much is that in figure? Thank you.
Looks like the land bank was for
Let me start with the Honorable Speaker's question. How far are we with the turnaround strategy of the bank? I think the bank embarked on the turnaround strategy about 2 years ago. And that one is still ongoing. I think we had identified about five areas to learn, which was one was the people. We need to have people who can deliver on the things that need to be done. Because one of the things that we identified within the bank was that we lacked experienced people to do things. So that one is an ongoing process. So that one is being dealt with. Then the other part we dealt with was the risk. Because we said one of the problems that you find with the land bank is that if you look at the income statement of the land bank for the past few years, you'll find that the bank is making money until you put the provisions through. So there was risk on the credit side. We're not dealing with the credit risk for historical reasons. Because over time, what the bank was dealing with had changed. The system had changed. The environment had changed. But we didn't bolster enough our risk system. So we needed to deal with the credit risk that was facing the bank and all other risks that were facing the bank. That one is also an ongoing process. We had to put the pillars to make sure that risk is addressed. Then we had to deal with the systems. Because also we found that one of the problems with the land bank, if you look at the annual report of the land bank every year, they also raise the issue around the fact that the systems that you have within the bank are not systems that are geared for a bank. So it's something that is being done now. The SAP has been rolled out in the bank, but not all the modules have been rolled out. So some are still being rolled out. Financial module was rolled out about a year ago, the operational. The HR module has just been rolled out. I think it went live in June. The banking module is going live in the next few months. So that one is also ongoing. And then we dealt with the brand and image of the bank. That is something that is being dealt with. It's an ongoing thing. So we find that the turnaround pillars, the things that the structures that needed to be there for the bank to continue to operate. Now, over and above that, now, what we've done, remember the land bank up until this year, the model was that make money on the commercial side and then take the profits and fund development on that, because then that would be a sustainable model. Because if we look at the experiences that we've had, we found that the development clients were having higher risk for historical reasons. They didn't have access to the market. They didn't have the distribution model. There were issues with skills and all those things. So we needed to deal with those issues. Now, for us to be able to go to that and put a lot of money in that, we needed to make sure that we've got those systems in place. So what then happened was that we were finding that for us to rely on that network, on that model for long, we're going to start to do development. So during this year, the model was changed. Hence, the 700 million, all of it is ring fenced for development, because if we're going to wait for profits to be done, then we're not going to deliver on the development side. So the full 700 million is going to be ring fenced for development. It's going to all go to development. Then the other issue was, how do you incur losses if you call for security? Now, what happens normally, typically you give someone a loan to buy a farm, and you do evaluation on the loan, or you on the farm, and then what then happens is that there could be a drought that happens on the farm, or what happens, whatever assumptions were there are not happening, and the people just don't get to sell the produce that they had, and they lose the money. When you go into the farm, normally you find typically that if you've got a harvest, it takes a year for someone to harvest. When he's missing one installment, he's missed one full year because it takes a year for a harvest. So when you move into the farm to try and take your security, what you typically find is that the values have gone down because the farm is abandoned. But for another year, you're going to keep the guy who's missed one installment and give them another chance. By the time you move in, you find typically that the securities have deteriorated because the farm is no longer being used. So you find that you lose money on that side. So even though you've got security, you go into an auction, and then when you go to an auction, the values are depressed. So that is where you lose some money on the farm.
Dealt with the how the 700 million together with the 1.5 guarantee. Now, lent them for the past 3 years, the auditors have refused to send financial statements to lend them because if you don't put the guarantee, the 1.5, the lending is not a going concern. So the 1.5, the way it was arranged was that it was going to be taken together with the capital levels of the lending. So when someone looks at the balance sheet of lending, when the investors in the financial markets look at the balance sheet of lending, they have to take into account the 1.5 billion rand and take that as part of the lending capital. Because we alluded to earlier, if for every rand that you lend out of lending at the moment, the investors, the financial markets are taking 93 cents, and the lending is only taking 7 cents. Now, the financial markets are uncomfortable with this because they think that they're taking more risk. They're saying lending should have its own capital. They should have more money. So it's creating a lot of problems for us because people are saying government is not coming to the party to put its own money, and they expect the financial markets to take more. Any other commercial bank in South Africa has got at least 10%. And unlike lending, which is in one sector, which is concentrated in one sector, which is agriculture, the other banks, their portfolios they've got agriculture, they'll have cars, they'll have housing, they'll have personal loans. So you find that the risk is spread across, whereas lending is only in one industry. If there's drought, or if there's hail, or if you get hit, and you don't have other assets in which you can spread the risk. So the financial, whereas any bank will have 10% capital adequacy. Lending, because of the higher risk, ideally you should have a much higher capital adequacy, which is what the markets have been saying. Would rather have higher capital adequacy because you are in one industry, which is risky. Any other bank in South Africa, they've got all small portfolios in agriculture because of the riskiness of agriculture. But lending is there 100%, so they want it higher. So Treasury came in and gave us the 1.5. Now, if you look at the 1.5 of Land Bank right now, so the other question was, you've got 1.5 on the one side, you also want talking about 700. So 1.5 is the solvency of the current book. For the book to, Land Bank continue to be solvent on the current book, you needed 1.5 to foster the capital levels. Now, if we go to the development side, then the 700 is going to bring us to do that side. Now, on that side, we're looking at using that with a multiplier of 20%, saying that with that 700, we'll go to the market and tell them that our capital assets will be 20%. So they can only provide 80 cents for every rent that we lend to the development clients, and then we'll take 20% so that we make them comfortable in terms of the risk that they have to take. But all of that 700 needs will go to the development clients. And then I think I've got this, who's going to benefit from this is all development clients. Now he's saying a land bank is not coming to the party. I think in December, November last year.
I'm not sure if that he's going to come back to this or actually fight the testimony while reporting this, right? My other question is where? My understanding is that the land bank will either ensure the loan or the stock bought by the loan. I'm not sure if he's going to
finish his response, and if you feel that he hasn't adequately addressed yet.
I think, deal with the narcissist lending is not coming to the party. I think last year in November, we put a moratorium on all development clients, say that we won't foreclose on them whilst we're looking at the reasons why they were not doing as well as they should. I think sort of put a moratorium on repositioning on the development clients. On the issue of the insurance is compulsory only to people. Where you've got an entity that is borrowing money, it was not compulsory for that the client took insurance. But where it was a person, because when lending has got an insurance subsidiary, and when this was formed some years ago in the 40s, it was to make sure that when the farmer dies, his family is taken care of. So
What then happens is that sometimes you find that people don't come as individuals, they come as an entity into the land bank. So in which case, those are not covered. It's not compulsory to take insurance.
Maybe I also missed your response to the issue of the amount written off and how far back does this go? There was a question related to that.
If you look at the, I'll give you the trend from 1997. So, 1997, the provisions of land bank were 91 million. 61 in 98, 88 in 99, 138 in 2000, 191 in 2001, 1.7 billion in 2008, 273 in 2004, actually 600 in 2004, 37 in 2005, and 3 million last year. Now, let me talk to this number. Because 2003, the move from under 200 million in provisions and spiked it to 1.7 billion. There's a reason for this. We came up with accounting standard AC-133, a South African Institute of Chartered Accountants, where you have to deal with your loans in a different way. This standard says that you need to fair value your loans in your balance sheet, whereas in the past, the auditors and the entities will sit down and negotiate what the provision is going to be for that year. Now the standard said we need to do it differently. Now, we'll remember that right about that time, all the banks were up in arms around the standard because there were huge provisions, especially for banks like NACFO, because they were not putting full provisions in their banks in terms of the standard. So, land banks had the same issue. Now, whereas we were not putting a lot of provisions in the past and we are recording profits now, what happens is that some of those profits that we were reporting in previous years had to be written down. So these are loans that were not good those years, some years before 2003. They had to be put, they had to be written down so that these loans can be shown at fair value, taking into account what has happened to those loans. So it's not necessarily that between 2003 things started going back. These are all historical loans. Now, one of the problems we also find with this standard, because last year, we converted from the South African accounting standard to the international accounting standard, the line standard of the world. When we did that, we had to adapt from the AC-133, the equivalent in the international standard is IF-39. This standard wants you to put through provisions that have been incurred, not what is expected. So, whereas you may think that you're going to have a bad loan next year, you can't put it through. You have to wait until the event actually occurs. So all these provisions that you find in the past 4 years that have reduced the capital level are not events that happened in those years. They happened years back. But also because generally with agriculture, when you give money to someone today, the event of non-performance doesn't happen in the same year. It happens a couple of years down the line. So you find that there's always a delayed effect in terms of the loans that you give this year.
Thank you, Chair. Just to follow up, we still need a figure on the non-performing loans. And then, do we understand now, which is not provided to us before, that the 700 million rand is required for development only? Then, if that is so, then the information that was given to us or to Treasury, seems to put us a bit off guard here. Because it talks about other issues. And then it talks about 700 million for development. I'm looking at another document that was presented at the Agriculture Committee, your budget for 2008. And it says there your development targets for 2008 were set at 300 million. And 1 billion for 2009 and 2 billion for 2010. Now we get 700 million. And do we have, through you, Chair, programs for the 700 million? I mean, is there a program in place how the 700 million then is going to be spent towards developing our farmers? And my last comment, Chair, is this, that if I look at the actual 2007, One would note that almost 300 million rand is spent by the land bank on car allowances, salaries and wages, professional fees, etc., etc. And that seems to be a rather large amount.
Can I also take Mr. Abdiya, so it's responsible?
Sir, one of my questions is this one, the one that breaks down. And the other question which we have not been responded to is a question where some of these loans are also part of the emerging farmers or those from Asia from their rebranding now. Follow-up question which I asked where, in my view, the loan is part of the asset. And they have to be your asset loan. That if you write it off at 8 months, now you come and want money from credit, have you budgeted the loan, which this loan is writing them off, before coming and saying to credit, we need this amount, so that part of this is the right of the loan. So, and in terms, I think, in terms of the SLA, when you write loans, it has to be within, it has to be charged somewhere within, or you must budget for it, so that it can be easy to write it off.
Thank you.
Loans. In the past, we used to look at the securities and say,
if there is a security, how much can we give? I mean, because now we look at the cash flows. We look at the, what are the cash flows that are going to flow from this, and then based on that, if we think that the cash flows are high, or we think that the cash flows are not going to afford the instruments, we don't give the loan. So we do look at that. So we don't really look at only, we look at the security after we've satisfied ourselves that on day one, this business can fly. So we then look at, do we have security then to, that our money would be sort of secured. But previously we used to look at the security and say, okay, this is the security we have so we can give money on that. So it sort of changed that model. Yes, it does apply to us.
The 95% of the loans written off were to white commercial farmers. I think I heard correctly. I'm assuming this was, you wrote them off this year, last year, the year before, in the last 3 years. That being the case, if you look at the loan, normally what banks do in securing these, they get collateral, some form of collateral. And it would be useful to know exactly where you stood as the land bank in terms of access to the actual land should a default occur, the security of that. You know, were you number 20 and still said, no problem, yes, 10 million or whatever. Why, if you were number one or two, why didn't you simply take the land?
Typically, a lot of the loans that Land Bank gives, we are the first bondholder. So, but the agricultural land doesn't have a lot of value by itself. So you find that you may lose money on the business except on the other things that you've done. And when you go to the, I mean, to the auction to buy the land, you still buy it. We buy it in. We still go in and buy it in, but you've got to get it in at a lower value, you know. So when you buy it in, if you were owed 100 rand and you went to the auction and you bought it for 50 rand, so the other 50 rand you have to impact. That's where the write-off you're talking about. You hit your income statement with the other 50 rand. So when you hit your income statement, it automatically changes your balance sheet because you're reducing your assets on the side and you're reducing your retained income. This is where you were asking how do you do that write-off. Because when you hit your income statement with 50, you're reducing your retained income. When you reduce your retained income, then you reduce your assets on the other side so that your balance balances. You buy the land back, and then you own the land after that, yes.
Okay. I think the members of parliament should be advised as members of parliament. As members of parliament, there's no issue. The official was referring to the honorable member first. And say, use it. I think you must withdraw to your chair and address the member for us.
Okay, apology accepted. But also, when members of parliament begin to have a dialogue with the officials, I mean, that is bound to happen. That is bound to happen. Because members of parliament must only speak when recognized, and they must speak through the chairperson. We want to proceed.
Just a short follow-up to the follow-up. You see, there's two sides of the coin. One is people not paying. But the other side is reckless lending. And the question I'd like to ask is, does the land bank grant loans to people who want to utilize land for purposes other than agricultural production? Has it happened? How much has been lost? And where does it reflect in the book?
It has happened, sure. Only in the last financial year, for the first time. So these are early days. But that time, so all the other years, we would be giving money for agricultural purposes. There were the products that we had where we were buying land for development, but it only started in the past financial year.
Okay. clarify themselves on the matters that they raise.
Second.
Patrick, Dr. Wood. Yeah, go ahead.
Just a small question on process, Chair, from National Treasury side. You know, as the vote says, you know, this allocation is subject to such conditions as the Minister of Finance may determine as related to a requirement of business plans, which means the Minister of Finance has not made a final decision on this. And this would apply for the earlier allocation to the now Lazar, where it was subject to the claim being audited. It's not understand from National Treasury's point of view, the logistics of this legislation before us as well, where we're being asked to start processing and approving, where we're still not certain that these allocations will be made. Will the minister have made up his mind finally one way or the other before the bill is formally processed? And if for any reason he's not happy with these, will those be adjusted or will take them off the bill? Just to understand that, thank you.
I would like my colleagues also to acknowledge. When you go to the actual bill, when you look at a Centex, you would see that it just talks about the conditions as may the minister might determine. And these conditions would normally be associated with what the entity discloses in its business plan. In the case of Centex, the negotiations about the business plan of Centex, I'm speaking under correction here, those negotiations have gone for more than 18 months. And the business plan that was acceptable was submitted on the during the course of August, and eventually we found compatible to proceed to cabinet with that.
I would leave my colleagues behind me here to answer about the other.
Subject to correction
related to the refinement of the business.
I think, like Shadi, you were saying, to a large extent, we have agreed on your business plan. We told you one or two items that make us slightly uncomfortable.
What makes it fall in the category of special adjustment? Because otherwise, we just demand away from the normal adjustment operation process.
In the case of the Centex, you also there, it was announced at the time. But I think that the CEO of Centex is also here. They could explain why the agency. But in the case of in their case, as I said, the negotiations on their business plan had been going on for 18 months, and for that period, we refused to transfer any money thereof. But they can explain what makes it so special.
Why is it categorized as an agent matter when we are just a month away from the normal adjustment appropriation?
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, members. As the ADG of National Treasury has explained, the question of the funding percent, I guess, has been going on for some time. During this period, as you would know, in the ICT sector, we do not have an abundance of skills. This is a sector where the skills take a long time to develop and for people to have experience. And also, it is a sector in which, because of the liberalization of the sector, many new entities are coming on board. As you know, we've got the new Second National Operator for the Electronic Communications Act that enables many more players in the field. So with every day, literally, that moves, we begin to lose people, particularly in Centex. I think the question of managers having been I'll use the word poached by the industry has been in the papers. So for us, you know, 2-3 days makes quite a difference in terms, particularly in terms of the skills that are required to be maintained in the sector. So that's what makes it very urgent. Obviously, quite apart from that, the role that CENTES is expected to play with regard to wireless broadband has got an impact on education, has got an impact on health, because we believe that particularly in the education sector, it is important that the learners are able to have access to this technology so that we can be able to improve the quality of education. So in that regard as well, we believe that the sooner we are able to actually roll out the infrastructure, the better. The nature of rolling out the infrastructure is such that you require to work on issues related to environmental studies and those kinds of things. So it's not a situation where the money is parked today, tomorrow you put up the mast, and then the day after tomorrow the system is running. So we're just saying there are quite a number of issues, but I think the most urgent one really relates to the staff retention experience. Staff. Thank you.
In the absence of further questions, we move on to the next one. 2010 FIFA World Cup development. Mr. Gibson Hand has been up for a long time. The chairperson of sport, Mr. Compella, as long as you don't confiscate anybody's passport. I want to go to France, Compella, please, Mr. Garcia. Mr. Gibson.
Chairperson, on the passport thing, I don't know if you noticed that President Mandela threatened that if they don't bring the World Cup home, we're going to confiscate their passports and they won't come back. So I think that's more constructive than Mr. Compella's threat. Anyway, Chairperson, I'd like to know how much of this 1.9 billion is going to each of the cities. Can we hear about each of the stadiums?
Breakdown of the 1.9, and then Mr. Compella.
Just to go on Honorable Douglas Gibson's question, is that to the DG of Sport, probably. All this money, is it going to all the stadiums? But we want to check, for the 5 new stadiums, what is the breakdown? And to the other 5, stadiums that are going to be revamped. But the other important question on top of that is that how do you measure that? Are you just saying one size fits all? Because there are bigger municipalities that have capacity and all that. And those that are smaller host cities that really need the help. How is this allocation? Is it 10% across the board or what? And then that's one question that I want to hear from the other question, Chair, is that when you check in the first sentence, in the first paragraph of the CFSA, funding required flow from so-and-so, but the last question is that due to inflation and a tight market and exchange and the rate of volatility there, I just want to check, is the department probably or has not put the 10% cap to take measures, to preempt that there might be those kind of escalations that are there, or are different escalations to what they should probably could have preempted on the 10%, 20%, whatever the projection that might be. Is this a different kettle of fish than those that are normally budgeted when you anticipate? Thank you.
Any other questions?
Sorry, Chair, I meant to ask another question. We noticed that this money is taken from the 2008 and 2009 budgets. Therefore, it means this is not additional money over and above what was originally envisaged. What happens when this money is insufficient? Is National Treasury going to come and ask Parliament for more? or municipality is going to have to find the money to complete the study.
Thank you, sir. It was a similar question about it's not additional money, but it's money from next year being allocated this year. But what I'd like to know is, in terms of the building of the stadium, are there municipal, provincial, and national funding that's going to be made available? And what is the breakdown in each respect? And has any province or municipality reneged on the amount that they originally placed on the table for construction of the stadium? Or in the respective areas?
Okay,
could we find out whether this money is allocated to specific construction activities, and if so, which activities and how is it controlled and monitored?
The last question from me, Chair, thank you very much. I just want to find out, Chair, we were probably given what we call the business plan to avoid white elephants. I want to know that probably from the DG. Did the DG get this business plan? Because DG, one of the anticipations that we probably had as a sports and recreation is that in Mpumalanga, for example, their business case, DG, is not a business case that really is arguable to say after the 2010 World Cup, that stadium would be sustainable, or remain there, utilized, and all that. On all cases that where the business plan is that criteria is a national professional soccer team, is a rugby, a Super 14 team, and all those other related issues. What could be the very compelling business case that has probably convinced the DG of national treasure to say, I think they wanted to get that kind of a stadium because their business case shows the sustainability of a particular stadium. Thank you.
I almost said, Chair, maybe the question would probably be relevant to Port Elizabeth, if not Nelson Mandela Bay municipal area. But my question, which is a very short one, in addition to that, would be whether this amount, and we are assured that they are not going to go on to any shortfall. We have had situations where there were escalations of prices and all sorts of building materials. And some of these construction companies themselves taking opportunity out of this whole situation, you know, increasing prices and so on and so forth. Well, these are not going to take care or cater for shortfalls that we've seen, especially in Cape Town and other municipalities.
What?
Thanks, Chair, and thanks, Honourable Members. I'll attempt to answer all the questions, and I'll request my colleagues to assist me. And I'll also like to extend a word of apology from the two DGs who are unable to be available for this meeting. Thank you. The first question was the issue of allocation per stadium. This 1.9, we do have a breakdown. I can read it for you in this presentation that we prepared. Nelson Mandela is
when you have finished reading them, if you could give them to the Power Calibration Office in ECO.
Wonderful. My understanding of the PSMA that when you deal with issues of finances and accountability, you need your DJ. The DJ should come and sit here and speak to the request. Now, so that in the final analysis, we will be able to hold the DJ accountable. That accountability you can't delegate in terms of the DJ.
We know that. Professor Gabriel. But when you're done, if we could have copies of the
Nelson Mandela will need an additional funding of 552 million. Mangaung Stadium, 110 million. Ellis Park, 24 million. Soccer City, 583. City of Swanee, no additional funding needed.
Is that 583?
583 million. Soccer City.
Point of order.
Madam.
I think Honorable Asia asked a question which really concerns us all, and which their DGs know when they have to come there to account. So it was not responded to, because they mentioned that two of their DGs have given apologies, at least one of them, or the executive officer, who have taken this meeting seriously.
Okay. No, Chair. I think with the greatest humility and respect, members are raising a very valid point. The DG, National Treasury Chair, has, and all other DGs, deemed it fit to come and be able to explain what is going on there. Unless the department, the DG for Sport, says we must request National Treasury not to give them this money because it is not in their interest. They are just doing a paperwork. That is what they should have been. But other deals can't go through their pay in their tight schedule and come, and the Department of Sports do not honor us. No.
Okay. On the point of order, Chairperson, with respect, I think my colleagues have been totally unreasonable. The meeting was called on a couple of days' notice. As recently as yesterday, this was supposed to, this finance committee was going to be sitting on something else. So I assume that these officials were asked to come at the very last minute. And I don't think one must assume that disrespect where none is intended. Particularly, I don't know where that DG is. He'll have to speak for himself. But I think it's discourteous to the official who's been deputed to come and talk to us. We can take this into account, but we mustn't be so set on our own dignity that we get allow that to get in the way of the work.
Okay. What I was going to do, the reason why I was allowing the CFO to proceed is because he's got a presentation, he's here now, and at the end of his presentation, what this committee was then going to issue is a letter that requested him to explain fully to us his absence, because all we got was a verbal apology when the CFO started his presentation. But we would want him to fully explain to this committee why he was not able to come for the committee. This committee is going to be considering this appropriation, this special adjustment next week. If the committee feels strongly that amounts to... you also still have to explain to us why also is in the category of those urgent ones. And you need to convince the committee why it is one of those. And perhaps you might then have to take that route next week when we gather to show that the teacher did not find it so important that you should leave everything to make sure that he gets this, because it may not be as urgent as you think. But proceed.
And just to reiterate that we only received the invitation yesterday afternoon at 4, and both the DGs were not available and requested that we come and represent them.
I don't want to address me on that one. I said to the wrong to the writing, and I'm requesting the DGs yesterday in terms of himself, I don't know. But all the DGs that I think got
short way, not just as the CEO of the money. Committee got very short notice because the agency comes from your side. It doesn't come from this committee. This committee rescheduled this meeting and prioritized today to deal with this matter.
May we appreciate for the committee to give us an opportunity to continue the responses. And I was just saying at that point in time, Swani, CGF, there's no additional funding requested there. It's a really 419 million. Polokwane, 280. Bombela, 80 million. Rustenburg, no additional funding. Then City of Cape Town, 443. And if you add them, they amount to 1905. The second question was also to do about what if the funds are still insufficient, what happens? The new projection that we received from the host cities and from the professional engineer doing the currently the cash flow forecast have indicated that if we give you money that we are moving forward or we are moving to the nearer period, it will be sufficient to do their work until the 31st of March. I must also mention to the House that with the initial funding indication was that this cash flow of the stadium was done without the involvement of the professional engineers. As a result, after the contractors have been appointed, a new cash flow forecast has been calculated and that led into the realization that there will be some shortfall as the project is running and speeding. The next question asked was the breakdown of the three local government, provincial government, and national government. At this stage, I don't have a breakdown of what is the contribution of the whole cities and the provinces, but I am. There is a contribution from the host cities that they are making from their funds and also from the provinces. I do not have the breakdown as to how much they are making into the stadium development. And the other question was which construction activities is the funds going to? Basically, this is for the whole construction project from the building of the stadium, zone 4, the layout and everything until the stadium is completed as the project plan is indicating. And the other question was about the business plan for stadium, the issue of white elephant. That one is another exercise where is the issue of dealing with the legacy of the 2010 and some of the stadium in are considering even doing what you call the malls, the multi-purpose stadium, where the stadium can become useful even after the World Cup and so on. I think I've covered all the questions so far, and then my colleague wants to add to some of the answers.
Thanks, Chair. The man who was a DG for a few minutes before I came in will come in and explain the stuff from the treasury, from the social perspective. But this is one of those adjustments which is also a good news adjustment, because it begins to say that we had a very good business plan and we had very good execution, that the execution is running ahead of schedule. And because the execution is running ahead of schedule, we are able to take an opportunity of saving on cost, because if we were to delay the implementation for the following year, we would be caught by next year's inflation and next year's volatility in the exchange rate. Question was raised about the municipality. Why the municipalities contribute? They contribute because they have added bells and whistles to what we have put. I can assure you, Chair, that we are not allocating more money to the stadium because people have added bells and whistles. But that man at the back here is, with your permission,
He can keep you for the whole afternoon, but I will ask him to restrain himself in terms of the input of the grade.
I'll be brief.
Thank you, DG. Chairperson, honourable members.
Just a moment. I think there was another question. Let's take those.
Sorry, Chair. I just want to allow me before you respond. That is not a question, so any response you could say. Chair, what the DG has said is my impression of what's written down on the document that was given to us. For example, if the stadium was going to cost 300 million, you budgeted over 3 years, 100 million rand per financial year. You find that in your first year you can spend 150 million, so you want that 50 million brought this year. That's my understanding and impression. But then when the CFO responded, he's talking about shortfall, and he's given us a whole figure of 400 million year, 500 million year, and so on and so. Is this projected budget overrun that we are looking at? Or is the money that was allocated in the 3 year MCA portfolio absolutely the money that we require? I don't get that clear.
That's it. And then it will flow from there. Sure.
I think I will raise this when the chair. Oh, let me. What I was raising, Chair, in terms of the CSMA, in your letter, perhaps you can. Includes chapter 5 of the PSMA, section 36 to section 242. In what I was raising, we were raising as a committee member, when it comes to financial matters, that's the responsibility of the accounting officer or the DG of a department. So it is not of the disrespect, it is what is in the law. We cannot sit here and break the law. Thank you.
Arriving from the previous question, I was listening very happily to the CFO until he made the statement, and I wrote it down, that with this money, there will be sufficient for them to do the work until the 31st of March. And the implication of that, to me, is that they're going to need more money. And then you also talked about shortages and overruns and so on. Because if we take Mr. Singh's example, 3 years, and you're going to spend 100 million a year, and you spend most of it in the half of it in the first year, then presumably you finish the whole lot in the second year, and that takes up to 300 million. But if all we've got is enough money to see us through to the 31st of March, then it means in the next budget we are going to have to post more money for the rest of it. Or do I misunderstand the answer?
I think the shortfall that was being referred to is an in-year shortfall. So the funds that got to vote, the funds per year, the funds that were voted for this year would have been exhausted before that. So what we are doing is we are heading so that the funds would go to the 31st of March next year. Then the outlay is, because in this case, it's not like the project is experiencing cost overrun. It just means that it is running ahead of schedule. So you are simply bringing the money forward because the project is running faster than schedule. But CFOs and economists are not always good at this. Malcolm Simpson is an engineer. He will answer this thing for us better.
Thank you, DG. Chairperson. Can I just take you through some critical dates so that we can put this in perspective? The stadiums, if we look at the five stadiums that we are revamping, the critical date is practical completion date. Soccer City is looking to complete their contract on 23 April 2009. Nelson Mandela on 16 February 2009. Moses Mabhida and Etekweni on 29 May 2009. Greenpoint, 31st October 2009. Peter Mokaba Polokwane, 31 March 2009. And Madison Sports Facility in Mombela, 15 March 2009. So these deadlines are fixed and have been set by LOC/FIFA. So what we are, we're in a situation in the project where these are fast-track projects. And therefore, in terms of the contract management,
the contractors have to develop a construction program that is fast track. And if one does a fast track construction program, the key function in that construction program is your procurement function. You must bring as much procurement as you possibly can forward to ensure that you have the materials on site to deliver against this. Now, we have a pretty tight market in terms of supplies. And the contractors, whilst I don't wish to sound patronizing, must be commended on their efforts to bring this procurement forward. This has resulted, and unfortunately I can share with you through our DG at a later stage, the expenditure curve. In the Treasury, we have accurate expenditure curves for these stadiums, and what we use is an upper and a lower limit expenditure. And a good project tracks between these limits. Now, if you see the curve, you will see at the beginning of the project, the cash burn rate has gone above the upper limit, which explains that they have consumed more cash at the front end of the project doing this necessary work of upfront procurement. Now, we as Sport and Treasury have engaged. We have seen the cash flow, projected cash flow rate for the host cities, and therefore this 1.9 billion that we would like to bring forward from the 2008-2009 year, which is currently at 3.8 billion, the allocation, we want to take 1.9 billion out of that and bring that forward. And as we go through this year's budget cycle, we will adjust the cash flows for the following 2 years and possibly bring forward from the outer year, 09, 08, 09, 09, 10, cash as well. So we are in, and let's, you know, pat ourselves on the back for once. We are in a good position on this project, and we should therefore enable the cities have these additional resources to ensure that the project is not constrained by cash flow shortages. There's nothing worse than having a project that is constrained by cash flow shortages. So that's where we're at. On the municipal funding, I have not all the figures, but I can give you an indication of certainly the Treasury's contribution. On Moses Mabhida, Treasury contributes 72% of the capital amount. The province and the municipality make up the rest. On Greenpoint, the Treasury contributes 69%, the municipality and the province make up the rest. On Soccer City, Treasury contributes 73%, and the city contributes the rest. On Peter Makaba, in Polokwane, Treasury contributes 77%, the city and the province do the rest. In Umbombela, Treasury contributes 89%, and the balance comes from the province and the municipality. On Nelson Mandela, Treasury contributes 76%, the balance coming from province and provincial and municipal treasury. On Ellis Park, 100% contributed by Treasury. And Magaung's statement, this has to be adjusted in that the province and the municipality are now going to contribute. That contract was let on the 31st of August, so I don't have the updated figures for you. On Royal Bafokeng, this will be adjusted because His Royal Highness of the Bafokeng Nation has agreed to contribute to some shortfalls on that stadium. So the figures will be adjusted. That contract has just been let within the last two weeks. On losses, there is through the Chwani Municipality, Treasury is contributing 100% of that 97 million for that upgrade. No, Treasury is doing that through Chwani. If we take
honourable member's question on whether these funds are allocated to specific construction activities. The answer is no. The funds go into what we set up in the conditional grant is a ring-fenced bank account in each municipality, so that this allocation can be monitored, and it will go into the stadium construction program. There's no specific activity that we are tagging for these funds. On the business case analysis, the honourable member questioned about the business cases of these stadiums. The Treasury did a very rigorous analysis of these, and the outcome is we are very concerned about the viability of this infrastructure after 2010. That's as far as we can say. I would presume it is up to the Department of Sport to put forward the next strategy on how to utilize essentially 10 billion rand worth of assets. That is what we will end up with after this event in terms of stadium infrastructure. On the escalation issue, in each contract sum, a provision has been made for escalation. So if you go to a stadium authority, you can ask, what have you provided for in that escalation pot? The Treasury, we have modeled this escalation, and we are, through our own internal debate, we will look at what, if at all, the impact of escalation is on this pot. I say again, the Treasury in the 8.4 billion allocated a percentage of that to escalation for each stadium, as well as a percentage for contingencies. The 1.9 billion is based on projected cash flow forecasts. That's as accurate as we can get it to this moment. Thanks. I hope this is sufficient.
Yeah. No, the DG did say that you can go on for the whole day if we let you do. We have come to the end of it. We would want to thank everybody that has availed themselves to be able to assist the committee in considering the special adjustment appropriation. The committee will meet next week, I think on the 12th, to apply its mind after we have had today's presentation. And depending on the outcomes of that meeting, we will then know whether the committee approves the special adjustment or, in the absence of the powers to amend, reject. Those would be the two. And, Mr. Mlot.
Thank you, Chair. I would request, Chair, that when we meet next week, Wednesday, that we should have a representation from the NAM, because we don't have the answer. And I don't think we want to be in an embarrassing situation where we have to say, I request the minister to amend the bill to take out, because this is a guarantee that has to be honored. So, and I think Parliament deserves to be given answers. So I would request that the management of DNL present itself before the committee and answer questions in relation to this contract. Because what we read from the annual report, we were supposed to build certain things. We want to find out whether they built it and what triggered the call of the indemnity. So, Chair, I think it's very important that people should not leave with the wrong impression that we have got an attitude towards state-owned enterprise. In actual fact, the Portfolio Committee on Finance started with all entities that respond to it. To give you a good example is that of SSA. Yes, it has exchanges between the statistician general, Badil Hosha, and we are the best of friends today because Lohota is doing well. The same with SAR. So I'm saying people shouldn't leave with an impression that we have an attitude. We are SAR and robust. So we want answers, and those answers have to come.
Thank you very much. offered to pay the same day because of the agency of the matter. Then the land was served and transferred for the committee on that day again.
I just wanted to convey my thanks to the committee for considering this such short notice. And I can confirm to the Honorable Moloto that it is not just the SA and SAR which goes through the green. I can bear testimony to that. I have seen it for many years. Yes, just that maybe I've got the battle scars and I'm now used to the closing questions from the committee. But thank you.
Okay.
Honorable Chairperson, for record, I think I support the position raised by the Honorable Member.